It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day from Phoenix, Arizona, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Well, oh, what's the news? There's so much news. There's stuff going on, and, you know, wow. What do we talk about today? But let me tell you what we're going to do. There is so many wars going on. You know, and a lot of it is between our ears. I mean, it's in our heads. It's being generous. But there's some blood being shed. Let me tell you where the real blood is being shed. Right now, on the borders of America and Mexico, there's blood being shed over control of the drug trade. This is spilling over into Arizona and border states and the country, and it always has been. Let me tell you what's going on. There is turf war. There are police, local police in Mexico, quitting their jobs. Their families are being threatened. Either they're bought off and working for the cartels, or they're being killed. I mean, en masse. Then you have the federales. You know, here we come. We got big guns. Yeah, oh yeah. You want to do business with the army? Well, you know, that might just be a show too. They're getting paid off to whatever. There's informants going back and forth. Blah blah. This is a side effect of a drug war. What happens when you just eliminate the black market overnight? This all goes away. Like that. We have the issue of immigration. They'll associate violence of immigration with the fact that they're illegal immigrants are coming in, they're Mexican, whatever, and so on. You get perfect control of immigration. No person comes in. You think that it's going to stop the violence if you have the drug war continuing? What happens when you eliminate the drug war? What happens then on the border? I mean, do we have, you know, people, hey, I just want a job? You know, are they violent? They're coming here to work legitimately instead of in a black market? We're going to talk about these things, and I can't think of anybody better than Howard Wooldridge. Now, you may recognize his brother Frosty as a columnist on Freedom's Phoenix, and we'll have him on the show tomorrow morning. His whole focus is save the environment, you know, ship the illegal immigrants back. And, you know, Frosty, he's allowed to have his say. I let him have his say. We don't agree, but he gets to have his say, and he'll have his say tomorrow, and we'll go at it. We've done it before. Now, Howard, his brother, came to our attention years ago when he rode his horse across the country, across America, to bring attention to LEAP, law enforcement against prohibition. I got you there, Howard?
Sure do. I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning, Howard. Howard, we're right up. It's a short segment here, just enough for me to introduce you and say, hey, yo, what's up? But when we come back, you know, I'd like to focus on your history and your efforts with LEAP. And, of course,
sure,
you know, you have a unique perspective on law enforcement, the drug war, and immigration. You've worked on that issue quite a bit, too. So
sure,
this all comes together, and I'm seeing, let me think of somebody better than you that might be able to take, I can't think of anybody. So we're going to go with Howard Wooldridge to give us perspective on the violence of this drug war that's spilling over into what has to be done. Well, we're going to talk about it. We come back here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, Howard Wooldridge, and Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the bees. That's the sound of the police.
Yeah, that's the sound of the police. Are you going, yay, they're here to protect my rights. They're here to ensure peace and tranquility and protect and serve and maybe not. And, you know, what is, you know, it's changed. When you got a police officer behind you, I was a kid, I'm like, you know, you wave out the back window, it's a policeman, you know, I'm so much, you know, safer and better and feel good and warm and fuzzy, and that feeling quickly goes away. I remember it was just in the late 90s, I was driving, and there was a motorcycle officer in front of me. And it had a around his little license plate on his motorcycle, it had one of those frames, and it said, "Smile, I could be behind you." And it made me so angry that, you know, that they know it, and it sat, and they revel in it. And I called the precinct, you know, the local one there that patrolled that area. And I want to talk to the lieutenant. I said, "Look, man, I just got voice my man. That really pissed me off. And the reason is there's we got, you know, the King's Highwaymen out there, revenuers. You know, they're confiscating stuff. They're not there to protect. They're there to infringe." And I'm going, oh, man, that gives me a bad feeling. And you keep doing that, and you keep amping it up. And now we got papers, please, going on right now here in Arizona. So I'm going, Howard, you know, where are we going, man?
Well, let me just say that, you know, I may disagree with what you and members of your audience put in their body, but I will defend to the death their right to do it. And the problem, as you just pointed out, is my profession has gone from protect and serve to search and arrest, and it is certainly an anti-liberty situation today where you need to fear the police because they will take your car, your money, your house, whatever, if you put something in your body that the government says they think might be bad for you, unless it's alcohol, tobacco, Prozac, and Valium.
Well, that's not even it. I mean, they it's not because they're so worried about what you put in your body. It's just because they got a permission slip to take. They're like, see, says I can, so I am. Ha, 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 ha. And this is the attitude. Tell us about your history. How did you get in law enforcement? What branch are you in?
Well, I was 18 years a police officer near Lansing, Michigan. Last 3 as a detective. I did everything but shoot somebody and get shot at. My claim to fame was arresting my college roommate for murder one. And after leaving police work, I wanted something important to do, so I said, you know, I can't arrest drunk drivers anymore, can't arrest child molesters, but if I could get my profession to stop chasing Michael Phelps and Willie Nelson, we could probably arrest more drunk drivers and child molesters. So 13 years ago, I got involved with the anti-prohibition movement, and now for the last 5 years since I rode my horse across America, I've been working the halls of Congress, pushing for nothing more, nothing less than apply the 10th Amendment, states' rights, to the issue of drugs, starting with marijuana.
Well, you know, why are we starting with marijuana? Because why? I mean, is there a principle there? Is it just easier? Is it what?
It's just easier. Essentially, every American has experience with marijuana, either personally using it or having someone in their close family has used it successfully, not to ruin their life, etc. And they know that this is something that is you know, safer than alcohol. And certainly something that the police should not be involved with.
Had a lot of calls on. Do you have a lot of calls, violence involving marijuana, did you?
18 years, I went to zero. Not a zip calls generated by the use of marijuana. Alcohol generated 1,300. It's a no-brainer to get this out of our hair, law enforcement, especially as a thin blue line gets thinner.
But what is the reasoning behind it, though? I mean, you have line officers. I give you an example. Mark J. Victor, criminal defense attorney here, deals, you know, he talks to drug dealers and cops and depositions and deposing, blah, 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 constantly. Mm-hmm. That's all he does. And he spoke at ASU 420 event, and he's like, look, man, law enforcement, judges, prosecutors, they all know this is all crap. You know, so what is their rationale or justification for being able to say that they're good guys? I don't even understand. The most avid drug warrior with a badge and a gun, their argument on enforcing these marijuana laws is what? How do they rationalize it?
Well, to the public, they'll say marijuana is bad for you and it leads to other drugs. And so we've got to protect the public from bad marijuana. We've got to protect it because marijuana is stronger. I can tell you in the halls of Congress with their lobbyists, the professionals in Washington, D.C., it's all about the money. They know that if you start rolling back the prohibition model of drug control, that you're going to lose overtime, you're going to lose positions of prison guards, et cetera. And so for at the top levels, it's all about the money, the burn grants, the federal money, the special task forces. It's paychecks, it's overtime, and they jealously guard their paycheck. It's all about money.
Well, so what's the opposition? How do you rally against that? I mean, is it public opinion? Do you, cross-incentivize? You got people doing initiative. I mean, you know what? I don't know how you get them on your side. I mean, if they're just mercenaries, if they're just there for the paycheck and get their little cushy whatever, then they're just as bad as a drug dealer.
In a sense, they are, because as we...
Heck, the drug dealer at least gives me what I want if I need something.
Yeah, it is definitely a consensual crime. But in that sense, yes, because of my profession, pushing so hard to continue all prohibition, child molesters are free today, drunk drivers kill extra people. It is getting Americans hurt and killed every day because we insist on having one police officer in 12 be a narcotics officer, even as they know that every drug dealer arrested, shot, or killed is replaced the next day. It's a completely ineffective, dysfunctional policy. Again, the paycheck, especially in these hard times, is more important than public safety, crime, the mess in Mexico. It feeds al-Qaeda and the Taliban. We're funding our mortal enemies with the money to buy bullets to kill our soldiers from prohibition. It's disgusting. It's too bad, but it is money.
So what are we going to do? Well, I mean, you know, you're out there doing, and you have other high profile individuals like Sheriff Mack was an undercover narc agent, you know? So he goes, I know, heck, I've inhaled, man. I've been out in, you know, the world. I get it. You know, this is such a, I'm wondering where the flip's going to be. I mean, you know, Willie Nelson, he's making, you know, we got Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, you know, kind of joking about. We got, you know, Kevin on The Tonight Show with Leno. They're always making fun of it. You got movies. You got Showtime specials. You know, heck, the name of the program's Weeds. I mean, it's so invasive into our culture and that, you know, it's just everybody's making fun of it. It's becoming very clear that it's not a war on some drugs. It's a war against people, and they've banned, like,
sure.
Right now in Arizona, they have turned in the petitions to have it on the ballot to decriminalize or make medical marijuana, whatever. They're playing around
right.
The edges on this thing, and I'm right. Like, hey, man, you know, I'm with, you know, my Freedom Summit partner, Mark J. Victor. He wrote an article as a criminal defense attorney. The title of the article is Legalize Methamphetamine. I mean, he picked the hardest one to make the principle. You want to stop all of this marketing to children. You want to stop all this stuff. You want to stop this craziness. I mean, you just got to get the concept of either you own yourself or you don't. But I want to ask you, as a LEAP guy, you're going out there. I mean, you were high profile a few years ago, and you rode your horse across the country. And tell us about that a little bit. But I want to know what your strong argument is. What is the focus that you're saying? You're going to the blue-haired, average age, 67 and a half, Republican sitting in a hall, and you're telling them what?
Well, you know, then go back to the meth issue. You know, and people in Congress, especially the Republicans, will say, well, what about meth? You know, like it's their big ace in the hole. I say, look, we give amphetamines to Air Force and Navy pilots on a regular basis to fly those long missions. Why can't a waitress or a worker, with permission from their employer, be allowed to buy a 5 or 10 milligram amphetamine tablet? This would cut out 90% of the meth market. And then if you have a drug problem, see a doctor. On what planet do you think the government can fix stupid? And this is the argument I come back with, at least in the halls of Congress. And for the average Rotary or Kiwanis Club that I go to, it's basically saying, look, we've got 14-year-olds being shot dead selling these drugs off sidewalks. It's simply immoral to have a policy which generates a job option which gets 14-year-olds shot and funds al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Can we at least once think about our poor soldiers dying for our freedom over in Afghanistan and say, you know what, it's more important that we think of those soldiers as opposed to some idiot who starts taking meth and has all his teeth fall out.
Yeah, no, I mean, a meth addict is the best poster child against meth, you know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely. Don't do meth. I mean, And the other part of it is, too, I put it at, look, how many people out there are going to start using meth, coke, or heroin, or crack if you make it legal? The polls have shown less than 1%.
Well, it's just like in alcohol prohibition, where we're mostly beer and wine. You need to have it concentrated, the alcohol, be able to ship it better. It's more efficient. Then you get the hard liquor. Right. You do the same thing with cocaine. All of a sudden, you got coca leaves being, you know, chewed on by the natives. And now you got crack cocaine that, you know, takes a whole bush and puts it in a whole thing. So I'm going,
right.
You know, it's the same concept. So this is, but when we come back, we'll get a little bit more into drug war and some history on Howard. But I also want to talk about immigration and how these go together and what's happening on the border. When we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Howard Wooldridge, we're going to learn a little bit more. Put your thinking caps on. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
God knows. All I want to do is break free from what? How about just lies? You know, a little bit of truth telling never hurt nobody. You know, and we got Howard Wooldridge out there from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition spreading the truth. Howard, that's one thing. How effective are you guys? I mean, you're out there spreading the truth. I tell you, you got a, you know, 18-year law enforcement veteran going out saying what's up. You know, speaking your own age bracket out there. You got people that are, I'm wondering, what are the type of people that come hear you? Are they kind of disposed that way anyway, wearing tie-dye shirts and got dreadlocks, smoking doobage? Or are they, you know, what?
We mostly go to the unconverted, because there's no sense in going to the people who already agree with you. We ride to the sound of thunder, where the battle is, not where the victories have already been had. We don't go to Normal. We don't go to MPP. We don't go to the others. We go to the Rotary, the Kiwanis, the AARP meetings, the Lions Club, etc., and say, look, here's the drug war. Here's why it's not working. Never will work. It's modern prohibition. Same problem as 80 years ago, same solution. And when you present it as policy and say, what drug do you think is more dangerous for both the user and their family than alcohol, they all go, oh, yeah, okay, maybe this, maybe PCP. But no drug is more dangerous than alcohol to the user and the family. When you put it in perspective for them, usually within 15, 20 minutes, you can get a lot of people either converted or certainly questioning their belief in prohibition and the ability of the government to fix stupid.
Well, I'm wondering, I'm still trying to grasp the opposition. I mean, you'll have, this is becoming so, certainly in the last few years, that it seems like the government is holding on as long as they can. Because they don't see it as a cost, because it doesn't cost them. It's just an excuse for them to cost us, and they get it. So I'm, you know, at some point that's going to be a political thing. It seems like they, you know, I don't have a faith in the electoral process. Not because I don't trust people. I don't trust the computers. I don't trust the government being able to judge their own laws constitutional. When you got the executive and the legislative and judicial lined up against the rights of the individual, you find yourself in a free speech zone with the Supreme Court going, yeah, it's okay. And then the same thing as you go into election. Okay, we'll let the people have some say. Well, you know, you got to do it on this touchscreen computer. And I'm going, every time it ever comes up, it wins overwhelmingly. And still, they ignore us. I'm like, is this government really ours, or are we occupied?
Well, let's not forget the three hardest words to say in English are,
I was wrong.
Ego. I tell you, on Capitol Hill, I've been there 5 years. I've really been there too long. I need to spend more time with my horse to find my mental balance. But politicians will throw their mother under the bus before they say, I was wrong. And this is true for up and down the line. Also, remember, follow the money. Besides the law enforcement, blackmailing your congressmen and senators to vote in favor of more money, more prohibition, by saying, I'll say you're weak on drugs and weak on crime, you also got the pharmaceuticals fear God's medicine as competitive, and rightfully so, because God's medicine, marijuana, is low cost, low side effect, low addiction properties, and highly effective. It will take the place of so many drugs, from Vicodin to ibuprofen. So Big Pharma is putting $100,000 in the freezer of your congressman as we speak. And then last but not least, it is the moral crowd. A good survey was just done. 30% of police officers oppose legalization of marijuana because of religious reasons. So those are my adversaries on Capitol Hill. But certainly money is the number one problem.
You know, that's one thing that's of interest to me. Religious reasons. I don't even understand how you link the two. You know, how is religion a part of being in opposition to legalizing a gift from God? I mean, I don't even understand it. What's the reasoning they use?
And I've been doing this for 13 years. Especially, it's immoral to put something in your body which hurts the body that God gave you. And what? that's their first, last, first and last statement. And all I can do when they tell me that, I say, look, this prohibition also generates a job option for which the government tells us about 1 million teenagers today are employed in the drug trade. Join a gang, sell the crack off the sidewalks. Every day, 2 or 3 14-year-olds are shot. Several die every week. That's got to be immoral, too, and they agree. So which is more immoral? The policy which gets teenagers shot and sucked into a life of crime, or an adult putting something in their body which is something that's going to hurt them?
See, I don't do the relativist kind of thing. What's more than less? I'm looking for a principle, and I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, being Christian, you know, I'm libertarian because I'm Christian. You know, I mean, they kind of go together. You know, Christ never said, you know, go to Caesar and say, make him do what I want. I mean, it was like witness, parable, testimony, example, voluntary persuasion. There was no force. And whenever you're going to use force to make somebody do something, I can think of nothing that's less Christian. You know, it's like just war doctrine. They always try and twist it into do whatever it is that they want to do. And I'm glad you're out there. There's a lot we can, rest of the hour we got to delve into, because this is happening in the halls of Congress. That's where it's going down. And this right here, we're having a battle in our minds, and I think we're winning that one. Now we got to get out and really go after the bad guys. When we come back here on Declare Your Independence, we'll talk about how.
Satisfaction in me. A little more pride, a little less fun. A little less pride, a little more smart. Close your mouth and open up your heart, and maybe satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby.
Yeah, satisfy me with some information. That's right. How about information? Not on there. We'll do the token later. You know, first I need to know the truth. And who's going to give me some truth? How about somebody that's been there? How about somebody that's seen the effect? How much? You know, that's one thing. That's a good question for you, Howard.
Yeah.
You have a history in 18 years that you've gone out, and I would imagine in your law enforcement that had an impact on you, that you have arrested individuals that were doing really nothing other than putting something in their body, and destroyed their lives, certainly affected it, and I would imagine it had an effect on you.
Well, certainly the times that I acted on someone possessing a prohibited drug, in retrospect, it was like, boy, you know, the drunk driving was a problem, but the marijuana I found in the car hurt them far, far longer than the drunk driving arrest. Because if drunk driving, Michael Phelps, the swimmer. I mean, he got arrested for drunk driving, no big deal. He got possibly using marijuana. He lost millions in contracts. He's now a bad guy because he was smoking a little marijuana. They certainly last longer, the prohibited drugs, as opposed to getting drunk and stupid and driving.
Well, I mean, are you making up for it? I mean, was there certain instances in your career that you're going, man, I got something to atone for, or you're just...
Well, and let me just say for you, I mean, most of the time when I found just marijuana in the car and the person wasn't high, I just threw it away. I didn't want to spend an hour of my time with the marijuana case, because stopping someone for a red light or stopping someone for drunk driving was 1,000 times more important than the simple possession of marijuana in the car. So I've thrown away collectively pounds and pounds of the stuff. But a few times I did, you know, take it for reasons. And, yeah, I certainly feel badly about it. And it is something that I feel today, that as I work towards removing prohibition from society, that I'm atoning for some of the things I did, and also, but mostly, protecting little boys and girls better, because I'll get those detectives out of the helicopters and on the chat lines, where right now the pedophiles are in the websites trying to meet your 12-year-old daughter or granddaughter in real life. That's where we should be focusing on, protecting little boys and girls, not going after Michael Phelps and Willie Nelson.
Well, I'm wondering how it is that that is such a hard sell. Because what happens is libertarians have been screaming this forever. I mean, I've run for Congress and U.S. Senate, and I have absolutely no problem making it a big deal. But the thing is that you find it is the corporate media that is the drumbeater for this thing. And their motivation comes from serving the public, telling the truth, what? There's something else behind it.
Well, it's money again. I have been monitoring this now for close to 15 years. Neither Time, nor Newsweek, nor U.S. News has ever done a major story on the drug war, modern prohibition. And as you look at those magazines, you'll say 2, 3, and 4-page ads for their drugs.
Okay.
Getting millions of dollars in advertisements for drugs. These drug companies do not want anybody to investigate cannabis, God's medicine, because it will compete very effectively with the store-bought pills. So to make their advertisers happy, they don't even run a story on what is the greatest generator of felony crime in America. I challenge any police officer out there listening to tell me what other single policy generates as much felony crime. When I was a detective, a solid 70% of my felony caseload touched crime associated with prohibition.
How is it affecting us right now on the border? How much do you know about what's going on in Mexico along our border?
I'm quite familiar with it.
Tell me everything.
It's not a secret. Per federal law, the number one focus of law enforcement on the border is drug interdiction. Once they've taken care of all the drug interdiction, then their secondary focus is people coming across. So the country is having more porous borders as we spend and focus our efforts on drugs as opposed to people coming across. And certainly more people are coming across. El Paso Times reported roughly at least 50,000 people in Mexico have fled across the border because of the violence of the drug wars down there. And even Tom Tancredo a year ago came out and said, we need to legalize, regulate, and tax at least marijuana to cut the problem, the agony of Mexico in half.
Well, I the agony of maybe the people, but that's not the people you got to convince.
That's true. Americans will throw all the Mexicans. Tens of thousands now have died. It's okay. As long as Mexicans are dying in the drug war, Americans have no problem with it. It's disgusting.
Well, so what do you think the solution is? I mean, what are you working for? What's going to happen?
Well, the solution is Ron Paul has made my job so much easier in the Congress. Republican young people under 30, 35. I went to CPAC now for 5 times in a row, the Conservative Political Action Conference. And today's young Republicans are very much libertarian, very much saying, you know what? What an adult does in the privacy of their own little castle is none of the state's business. The problem is we need those people and everybody to push their elected officials to say, adopt that privacy-type clause, which is in the Alaska Constitution, which allows Alaska to have legal marijuana as we speak. And it's a question of educating our legislators and then convincing them to vote. As I say in the Congresses I work for, employ the 10th Amendment on the issue of marijuana prohibition. Empower the states to let them do what they feel is best for their state. Let Jefferson City run Missouri.
I am... we see so many good examples of just how bad and corrupt this is. I'll give you an example. We have California. They decriminalize it in certain ways. DEA still goes in. Federal, we got the big jackboot, and you have the right jackboot or the jackboot on your throat party going, we're going to do whatever, and the Democrats elect Obama. Oh, and the promise, yeah, I'm not going to do it, and then he goes in, does it. So now you got the left jackboot of the jackboot on your throat party. And I'm going, you know, who really runs everything? And it's becoming very obvious that even the representatives of the people that we would put in there on whatever promise that they're making, they're not really in charge. Who is?
Bureaucrats. All those GS-10s, GS-12s, GS-14s who write all the rules and regulations, they have, in a sense, they have more power than your congressman and U.S. senator and a U.S. president in a very real sense. Because once the law is passed, it's those people who write the actual regulations, and which then federal law enforcement enforces. So that's a big chunk of it right there. But the legislators can pass that pass the laws. Like you've seen, we got 14, 15 states now with medicinal marijuana. Massachusetts, the voters made marijuana a parking ticket level offense. We do have the power. We are exercising it. We need to do more of it.
Well, I'm glad you guys are out there, and just the time that I've known you. What year was that? Was that 04, I think it was,
five.
That
05,
you did your...
We left the beaches of L.A. in March and got to New York Harbor, Lady Liberty, 7 months later, 7 months, 34, 100 miles in the saddle.
Wow. Yeah, and this is, you know, that was an interesting, and I would imagine, enjoyable event. You know?
No.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, this cross country.
Hot.
Now, what time of year was it you did it?
Well, it was in the spring when I left, but when we got to the stretch there in Nebraska and Iowa, Wisconsin, it was 100, 102, blazing heat, and you know, on a horse, I didn't carry an umbrella.
No, man, I would have. You know, the one thing that you were able to accomplish was to get a lot of attention for LEAP and the cause and so on. And I'm wondering how congressmen now, when they're facing their constituents, which they do as little as possible, by the way, you know, when they face their constituents on this issue, they are starting to lean over. I mean, are they ready for decriminalization? Is that on the horizon? Do you see that happening?
We see change. Perfect example, Congressman Rob Bishop of Utah, Republican, was at CPAC, promoting the 10th Amendment. And I asked him, I said, would he vote yes to a bill to repeal federal prohibition of marijuana? He went on for 2 minutes about marijuana's bad, causes problems, etc. He said, however, I believe in the 10th Amendment. I will vote yes to make marijuana states' rights issue. Congressman Fred Upton from Kalamazoo, Michigan, met with a colonel, Vietnam veteran, who had a cancer and had a problem with store-bought pills. And in 1 hour, this retired Army colonel convinced a congressman to vote yes for states' rights for medical marijuana. It can happen. Single individuals out there can make a huge difference.
Well,
never
they have
underestimate the power of one or two people to make a difference by their own personal story, saying this is the way you need to go in terms of law. And we are in the process of changing, but we need more people to do that with their congressman and U.S. senator.
Well, what do you think the overriding issue is right now? I mean, as it would relate to drug prohibition, is it, I don't know, revenue? Is it, you know, the CIA needs to make more black bag money? I mean, you know, I don't understand what the, is it pharmaceuticals? I mean, is it a combination? Where's our real enemy?
It's a combination of all those three. Law enforcement is fighting it because they want the money. Pharmaceuticals are fighting it because they don't want marijuana as a competitive product. You've got the moral crowd out there saying it's immoral to take drugs. And then you have, as I say, the three words, I was wrong. However, because of the money, California is tracking 5, 6, 56% this fall to legalize, regulate tax. And by the way, Misty and I will be going out there Labor Day through election, work the street corners, up and down the state of California.
And so Misty's your horse.
Misty's the horse. Right. And we can stick the finger in the eye of the federal government saying, you can have your federal prohibition, but California refuses to participate. And that will be the first major break that will break the prohibition in at the federal level, and that's why we're going to spend 10 weeks in California. It can be done, but we got to push to keep this thing going, and I think we will. At the end of the day, money is what is the problem across America. Illinois is reducing their state troopers by 600, 30% reduction, and Illinois has to decide, do they still really want troopers and officers going after Michael Phelps and Willie Nelson, or maybe let that go so they can focus more on drunk drivers and child molesters? Tell your legislators where you want the thin blue line to go.
Well, what's the incentive? I mean, there has to be some social and economic engineering done by the, you know, pharmaceuticals control guys on high from Washington. I mean, how does a financial incentive reach down into a local small town law enforcement agency? I mean, they're saying, you know, I'll give you an example. Here in Arizona, you get your car stolen. They take a report over the phone. You know, you shouldn't have bothered us. And then, you know, we go, yeah, but I smelled marijuana. Boom, here comes the helicopters. Why is that?
Sure. Well, again, follow the money. When I arrested very bad men for hurting 7 and 8 year old boys and girls, I got great job satisfaction. However, I could not take the home, the car, the money of the child molester. Today, we find somebody with drugs, we take their money, their car, and their house. We have a financial incentive to spend more time on the marijuana dealer than a child molester because we steal, basically, about $3 billion, B-boy, billion dollars a year of drug dealers versus we get no money when we arrest a child molester. Now, your audience contains detectives and police officers may not like hearing that, but the bottom line is money is trumping common sense and taking care of little boys and girls.
Well, is it also, I mean, from your experience in local municipalities, I live in the city of Phoenix here, and policy comes from the top down, and they're going to say, you know, thou shalt, and then they shall do. And that comes from monetary incentives, I would guess. So I'm wondering, you know, are we need to focus on Congress and them not doing this kind of social and economic engineering, or do we need to, you know, locally for them not to take it?
We got a lot of static.
We got a lot of static. There's some noise in the background.
Okay, sorry. You could talk to your city council members and direct the chief of police to make marijuana, for example, the lowest priority, or make simple drug possession the lowest priority.
You do what?
Seattle's already done it. And Seattle, for example, made it by law 6 years ago, and then the new city attorney in Seattle declared he is not going to prosecute one case of simple possession of marijuana.
Okay, stop right there. Who said what? Seattle, was he prosecuted? He's who?
The city attorney of Seattle ran on a platform of, if it's simple possession, 1 ounce or less, in the city limits, he will not prosecute. And he was elected, and that is now the policy in Seattle. If you have 1 ounce of marijuana or less, 21 and over, there is no crime, no sanctions, no nothing.
Well, there may be a crime, but he's not prosecuting it.
Exactly. Well, effectively, there is no crime because the prosecutor will not prosecute.
Now, I'm imagining if somebody, you know, we have, I'll give you an example. We have a county prosecutor, libertarian, that happens to be an attorney and the state chair of the Libertarian Party here in Arizona is going to be running for county prosecutor.
Uh-huh.
He was to say, you know, exactly the same, I'm going to do what Seattle did. Boom.
Uh-huh.
You know, we make big stinking deal out of that. Then what? I mean, is there any sanction that the state legislators want to get on this guy? They say you need to be impeached or removed from office or prosecuted or whatever for not enforcing the law. I mean, even though he got elected on that very thing, I mean, what was he looking at as opposition?
My understanding is he is facing no sanctions. Every prosecutor can decide to prosecute or not prosecute a case. As Obama made a decision a year ago to say he's employing the 10th Amendment for 15 states with medical marijuana. He said, you know what, we have limited federal resources, so therefore we are not going to waste them on medical marijuana.
You know, that sounds like, you know, I'm going to let Michael know this. I'm like, you know, a Seattle prosecutor, you know, said city attorney's coming up and he's going, Nah, we're just not going to waste the time focusing on other stuff. I don't know how that could be argued, but we'll talk about it some more when we come back in the final segment here on Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and Law Enforcement Against Prohibitions, Howard Wooldridge. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, Howard Wooldridge from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You know, the one thing that I want to make sure that we cover before you leave in this last segment, Howard, is what do you think the prospects are across the country of where we're at? I mean, you have 50 states, and how free are American people going to be?
Well, certainly moving forward, with the budgetary problems in every state, you're going to see more and more pressure to reduce the jail sentences for those convicted of drug crimes. You're seeing a better awareness coming up from, especially like your advertising news reviews. You know, people seeking out alternative information sources is helping educate Americans, and that's why we're tracking well all up and down the West Coast of ending marijuana prohibition first. So I strongly believe that this is going to continue and move forward, especially with all the people out there pushing on the issue.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. And I know you've had a big impact on this, but you know, in the final couple of minutes here, I wanted to get your impression on what's going to happen with the drug laws in Mexico. And, you know, because a lot of places like Bolivia, they just kicked the DEA out and said, you know what, you can start growing coca plants in your backyard, man. It's all good. You know,
a good thing, again, with Mr. Obama, for the first president since the drug war got going, he's taken a position, it's your country, do what you want. Mexico, nearly a year ago, decriminalized everything in small amounts from marijuana to heroin, saying, again, the police don't have the time and resources to go after simple users of any drug. Argentina and Colombia did the same thing on a Supreme Court decision down there to say it's a privacy issue. Go figure. In places like that, they feel that a citizen in the privacy of their own little castle should be able to put something in their body without interference from the state. We haven't quite got that level of freedom here in America, but we're working on it. So certainly in Mexico, their problems down there, their disaster is going to, it can only be helped out by America ending its prohibition policy, because they'll continue killing each other at a horrific rate.
Well, you have, you know, the pharmaceutical industry. Heck, they wouldn't even have to go through the State Department. They're just going, yeah, boy, well, we got some money for you to keep it this way. In fact, I would bet you the cartels, the drug dealers, more than anybody else, want to keep it illegal.
Oh, absolutely. In California, it's going to be a no-brainer. The cartels are going to put serious money into the Keep It Illegal campaign, along with, of course, the Narcotics Officers Association of California is funding the effort to keep it illegal. The illegal growers up in Humboldt County, Northern California, have already decided they're going to fight the legalization because it would be a disaster for their paychecks. And, of course, the prison guards are also going to fight it. So you've got this strange combination of Mexican cartels, police officers, prison guards, and illegal growers are now in their own little lobby group to keep it just the way it is. And the bottom line for all four groups is money.
Wow. We're up against, you know, the only competition for all of this that I've been able to discern is just truth, information, spreading the word, freeing the people's minds. I don't know any other way of doing it, and you're doing a great job of it, and I really appreciate you being out there, Howard.
Well, you're most welcome, and as I say, for me, I'll be working on this issue until it's in the history books or I draw my last breath. This is a cause worth going after. If nothing else, our poor soldiers are getting killed with bullets bought by drug money. My father was 26 years a Marine. My brother Frosty was an Army officer. My other brother was Gulf War I. This is disgusting that we put trying to save some idiot meth head or crack head ahead of our soldiers, et cetera. It's just lunacy.
Well, thanks for coming on, Howard. It was a pleasure, and we look forward to talking to your brother Frosty tomorrow on immigration. I'm sure you had an opinion, but you're so interesting on this issue. I wanted to make sure this got done. You know, I mean, in 10 seconds, you want to give an immigration thing?
Yeah, the immigration thing, it's basically punish employers, fix the fence, And let's stop all immigration for at least the next 10 years. We don't need more unskilled labor.
Well, hopefully we would if we'd increase the economy. We'll be right back.